Now it's time for the Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. This is your weekly informative hour all about eyes. Learn about cataracts. Ask a question about glaucoma. Find out how diabetes affects your eyes. Stay tuned for an entertaining and educational program about eyes and eye care. Call in to have your questions answered by the doctor. Now, your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Good morning, everyone. It's time once again for our regular weekly program about eyes and eye care. It's called the Hawaiian Eye Show, and it's sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. We're going to be here for an hour talking about glasses and bifocals, laser beams, and eye surgery. We can talk about your cataracts or your contacts, itchy eyes, droopy lids, or whatever it is that interests you. If you'd like to join in today, give us a call. Our number here, 521-8383. We'd love to hear about your experiences and answer your questions. If you can't call in or maybe you're feeling a little shy, you can always email your questions to us. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and we can answer those questions over the air. Look us up on the web while you're online at www.hawaiianeye.com, or follow me on Twitter. It's twitter.com/Dr. Tortora, D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A with no spaces. And you can even learn about some of the things that we were talking about on the radio show today live on Twitter. And you can also find some of the links about articles that we're talking about right there on Twitter or on Facebook, facebook.com/Hawaiian Eye Center. Look for us there. During the next hour, we'll discuss eye news from around the country and around the world. Sometimes we'll do a little eye quiz to test your IQ. We'll have a lot of fun today, and sometimes there are a few surprises. Now remember, all opinions expressed on this program today are those of myself and the other medical doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center. That's Dr. Stephen Rhee and Dr. Bill Perryman over in Hilo. And that we're all ophthalmologists, or IMDs, which means we're medical doctors who specialize in the eyes. Now, we're going to try to be consumer-oriented today, make an effort to give you the best possible practical advice. But remember, since I can't see through the telephone, I may have to recommend an examination before I can tell you exactly what's happening in your eyes. Hawaiian Eye Center does sponsor our program today as a public service. So sit back, relax, and enjoy an hour all about eyes. Well, we like to spend the first segment of our program here talking about some of the things that we've encountered in the office over the past week. And one of the things that seems a few people were complaining about this week, some of them actually quite bitterly, was what we refer to as floaters. Floaters, if you don't have one, you probably don't know how terribly annoying they can be. Floaters are a little bit of material that's inside your eye that floats in and out of your vision. And the reason they call them floaters is they move around inside the eye, and so they appear to float around inside your vision. The most one of the more common things that I hear people with floaters saying is that they see a little something in the side of their vision. They think it's like a bug on the wall, or a cockroach or something, and they look over, and in fact, there's nothing there. And it's actually that they see it again off to the side, and in fact, it's something in their eye, and they're seeing this little bit of debris or material inside the eye that's casting a shadow on the back of the eye and causing a sensation of something floating around in the vision. Floaters can take many shapes and forms. Floaters can be dots, spots, they can be webs, they can be arcs or different shapes and sizes. They can be large, they can be small, there can be one of them, there can be many of them. And floaters are basically all characterized or all related to changes inside the back of the eye. Now, the most common cause of floaters, and actually we had a patient with floaters this week who actually didn't have the most common cause of floaters, so there are other causes of floaters. But the most common cause is that there's some bits of debris or cellular material inside the eye that are floating around in the inner part of the eye. There's a kind of a clear, thick gel that fills the inside of the eye called the vitreous gel, and it's optically clear, so you can see right through it. But because it's like a gel rather than a liquid, over time it becomes more, it changes over time. It shrinks a little bit, it becomes thicker. It dries out, I guess, a bit, and as it does so, it pulls away from the back of the eye. And as it pulls away from the back of the eye, sometimes little darker areas end up getting stuck inside that vitreous gel, and then they float around in there and become what we call floaters. Another thing that people often see associated with floaters is flashes of light. Flashes of light occur in the presence of what we call flashes and floaters, which you may have heard of because it's a common term. If you have flashes and floaters in your vision, you should get in to see an eye specialist right away because it can be a sign of a retinal detachment, and you want to catch that early if you have something like that. And flashes are kind of a little flash of light, a little little spark of light that you see usually in your peripheral vision also. And there's not really something there. So it's sort of, in a sense, it's like if you're, in a dark house that's near a road, and there's a car passing from time to time on the road, and as the car passes, the lights kind of flash into your house for a second. It's like just a little flash of light. And that's sort of what a flash, as in flashes and floaters, are like in your vision. You see a little bright flash in your peripheral vision. Now, some people only see them when it's dark out, so they see them more at night or when the lights are dim early in the morning, that type of thing. Others see them all the time throughout the day. They're aware of it, flashes. So flashes and floaters together mean that that vitreous gel inside your eye that we were talking about, that clear gel in the eye, is actually pulling away from the back of the eye. And as it does, as it pulls away from the retina is a seeing tissue, and it pulls away from that seeing tissue, and all the retina can do in terms of responding to a stimulus is see light. And so a little pulling or pushing or tugging on the retina creates a little spark of light that we call a phosphene. So this phosphene or flash of light in your vision is actually a sign that something is tugging on the retina a little bit or pushing on the retina a little bit. Some people get flashes when they rub their eyes. Rubbing your eyes, you're pushing on the retina, you'll see a little flash of light. Some people get flashes when they move their eyes suddenly from one side to the other or turn their head suddenly. That gel, vitreous gel inside the eye, may be a little loose and it may be bumping into the retina because it turns a little more slowly than the eye itself does, and so then it bumps into the retina and causes a little flash. So these flashes can occur normally as well, but if they're occurring associated with floaters or associated with pulling on the retina, then they could create, it could mean that there's a little hole or a tear being created in the retina itself. And if that happens, and this is more common in people who are very nearsighted, if that happens, then you want to get it checked out, because if a little hole or a tear does develop in the retina, that's a sign of high risk for retinal detachment. If you have a detachment of the retina, if that thin, sensitive retina tissue in the back of the eye detaches or separates from the underlying tissue inside the back of the eye, and fluid gets underneath that, and that retina separates or detaches, then that damages the sensitive, delicate retina tissue fairly quickly. And if the retina is detached for more than just a very short period of time, it is hard to actually fix it with a good vision result. So retinal detachments can be repaired, but the best results occur when they're repaired very early in the process. So if you're seeing new flashes, especially if they're associated with floaters or floating spots in your vision, then you need to get in to get that checked out right away. So that's important. The main take-home message: flashes and floaters mean you need to get an eye examination. And if you see a new change in the symptoms, then you need a new look inside your eye. So new changes, new look. So get in to get checked if anything's changing as far as that goes in your vision. Now, flashes, floaters can be a chronic problem. When you have floaters, that's something that you're going to continue to have. So go ahead and get used to it, because there's really not a whole lot that can be done for floaters, unfortunately. And we do have a lot of patients who have had floaters for years and years, and they say, oh my gosh, these floaters still bug me. Have you come up with anything you can do for them yet? And periodically there are attempts to treat floaters using different lasers and surgical techniques and so forth, but it always turns out that this kind of the collateral damage, the dangers of doing this type of treatment outweigh the benefits that people get from this type of treatment. And so we usually end up saying, no, there's no good treatment for floaters at this point. So you kind of have to live with them. The good news is the longer you live with them, the more accustomed to them you become, and then you don't notice them as much, and it's not quite as bad over time because you're not noticing those floaters quite as much. We're going to take a short break. When we get back, then we're going to get to some news stories, and of course we'll be also taking your calls.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Hawaiian Eye Show phone lines are now open. Give us a call at 521-8383 with your questions for the doctor. If you're calling from the neighbor islands, call us toll-free at 888-565-8383. Now, back to your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Totora.
Ah, yes, Hawaiian Eyes. And here you are listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show. Isn't that a coincidence? So go ahead and think about what you want to ask us, because we're going to be taking calls in a little while. We're going to talk first about some stories in the eye news. And one of the things that has attracted some attention in the past couple of years has been new treatments available for macular degeneration. Macular degeneration, of course, is a disease that affects the central vision, and it can cause, it doesn't cause complete total blindness. So those of you with macular degeneration, rest assured that you won't be going completely blind. It can cause very severe central vision loss, and due to this central vision loss, it can have a huge effect on someone's ability to function in terms of their ability to see well or their vision issues. And so if you have macular degeneration, one of the wet form of macular degeneration, your retina specialist will probably be recommending a course of injections of medicine into the eye to help curb the growth of abnormal blood vessels that causes this macular degeneration. And these abnormal blood vessels can be controlled with repeated injections of medication into the eye. The difficulty with repeated injections into the eye is that with every injection comes some risk of infection. And so the standard of care thus far with these injections, which occur once a month, could be for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. So there could be, ultimately hundreds of injections in your eye. The downside is that we want to prevent infection, but what some astute clinicians have noticed is that for people who are repeatedly treated with antibiotic medication to help reduce the chance of infection, these people are developing changes in the bacteria that naturally live on the surface of the eye. So if we are doing eye surgery for your cataract, for example, that's a one-time thing. We'll give you some antibiotic drops. It kills off most of the bad bugs, the bad germs, and so that reduces the chance of infection inside the eye. You use it for the cataract surgery on one side, and then you use it for the cataract surgery on the other side, and then you don't use it again. What's happening with these macular degeneration patients is because they're having multiple treatments, they're also getting multiple doses of antibiotics. And by getting a week's worth of antibiotics each time they get an injection, they're actually altering the normal bugs or bacteria that live along the eyes, on the eyes and along the eyelids. So it says here that this study that I was referencing, it says a controlled longitudinal analysis randomized 24 patients or 48 eyes with choroidal neovascularization to one of four antibiotics. So they used several different potential antibiotics. One was azithromycin, one was gadifloxacin, one was moxifloxacin, and one was ofloxacin, following intravitreal injection. So basically people got their injection and then they were put on a course of antibiotics afterwards to reduce the chance that they develop a serious infection in the eye. Subjects received four consecutive monthly unilateral injection and then treatment as needed after that. Bacterial isolates were tested for susceptibility to 16 different antibiotics. They found that resistant strains of staphylococci emerged immediately in response to either of these types of antibiotics, either the fluoroquinolone class or the macrolide class of antibiotics, and they were maintained by periodic re-exposure. They also found the increased resistance to multiple drugs, with 81% of the bacteria resistant to at least three antibiotics and 67% resistant to at least five. Okay, so this this presents a problem for us as clinicians. You know, we want to give antibiotics to prevent the risk of infection, but by doing so, are we doing harm by creating more resistant organisms, more resistant bacteria out there? And this is a constant fight, a constant issue with antibiotics, and it's one that unfortunately we may not be winning in the immediate future, because we've always been one step ahead of the bugs. The bugs are we've always had something that would kill the bugs, the antibiotics, the bacteria, the viruses, things that would kill them, and antibiotics, antivirals. Now we're getting increasingly better with antivirals, but antibiotics, unfortunately, bacteria are very versatile and they evolve very quickly. They grow very fast and they have the opportunity to evolve quickly because many generations occur within a very short period of time. And so they can develop change or resistance to antibiotic effect over time. So basically what happens is, let's say you have a group of, a million bacteria, and let's say they all are killed by the antibiotic A except for, 10,000 of them. So that's pretty good. You've killed most of a large percentage of those bacteria, more than 99% of those bacteria. And but there's still 10,000 of them hanging around. And those 10,000 have something about them that is resistant, that allows them to be resistant to that antibiotic. They don't die as a result of exposure to that antibiotic. So those 10,000 bacteria can very quickly multiply into 20,000, 40,000, 80,000, 100 and something thousand, and eventually a million over a very short period of time. So now you're back to a million bacteria that now are resistant to that antibiotic strain because they've passed on some of their characteristics. Now, maybe not all million are resistant, but a significant percentage of them are, because they get that gene, whatever it is, that protects them from the antibiotic. And so then if you treat again with the antibiotic a few weeks later, then again you kill off all the ones that aren't resistant. So the ones that are resistant then are allowed to reproduce, and they become more frequent or more commonplace. And so this is why you get this high antibiotic resistance through repeated treatments with antibiotics. Unfortunately, there are more and more bacteria out there now that are resistant to multiple antibiotics. And as a result of using antibiotics a lot in a hospital setting, for example, there are bugs that you can pick up in a hospital setting which are resistant to multiple antibiotics. And so as a result, it's often very difficult to treat people. You add to that the fact that some people have allergies to certain medications, certain antibiotics. It means that it can be really a significant issue to treat some of these patients. So increasing antibiotic resistance is an increasing problem in medicine today. And one of the difficulties that is associated with this problem is that there are the drug companies, the pharmaceutical companies, have very little incentive to develop new antibiotics. Well, sure, if they want to save the world, they will. But what pharmaceutical company is interested in saving the world? They want to save their shareholders' pockets, right? So pocketbooks. So they're interested in making money. So what makes a drug company money? Well, expensive new designer drugs that are meant to be taken for life. Well, a drug that's supposed to be taken for life is something like a cholesterol-reducing drug or an antihypertensive drug, a blood pressure drug, or a medication to treat AIDS or something like that. But the medications that are used in short pulses or bursts, like an antibiotic, don't make a lot of money for the pharmaceutical companies. So if they're going to invest a lot of money in developing these drugs, particularly since they need to come up with whole new classes or whole new agents that are not only toxic to the bacteria but safe for human beings, they're going to need to invest a whole lot of money in this research and development. And the trouble is that currently, with the current market system that we have for pharmaceutical companies, there's really no incentive for them to go ahead and do this. So there aren't a whole lot of antibiotics out there in the pipeline that are better than what we have currently in terms of being able to treat resistant antibiotic resistant bacteria. So we really are in a bit of a quandary here, that these resistant bacteria may become increasingly common. And when you develop an infection, a serious infection with one of these resistant bacteria, there may be really no treatment available to get rid of that infection other than your own natural immune system. And, we've saved a lot of people since antibiotics were developed. And so not to have the ability to treat with antibiotics may be a very, very important factor in healthcare, in medicine, moving into the future. So that's a little bit about how ophthalmology has kind of contributing to resistance of bacteria just by having procedures that we need to do repeatedly and treating people with antibiotics afterwards. Would I say we shouldn't treat them? I wouldn't say that because we don't want them to develop an infection, but it's important to know when we're deciding whether to treat them and so on, it's important to know what the potential downsides or what the potential risks of that type of treatment are. So if you want to give us a call, we do have open phone lines now. You can reach us here at the station. 521-8383 is the number to call here on Oahu. If you're calling from the neighbor islands or if you're listening to us on the iHeartRadio app from somewhere other than Oahu, you can give us a call at toll-free from the neighbor islands or from the mainland at 888-565-8383. And you can ask us whatever it is that you'd like to ask about. And if you'd like to reach us on Twitter, you can go ahead and tweet to us. And we'll go ahead and try to answer your tweeted questions as well. At Dr. Tortora is our Twitter handle, our Twitter address. D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A without any spaces. And we'll be happy to try to answer any questions over the air. I'm going to talk a few more news stories coming up after we take a little break for the news in a minute or two. But first, I wanted to get back for a moment to this issue about floaters, because we were talking at the beginning of the program about floaters and flashes, and we were talking about whether there are any potential treatments for floaters. And what I did start to say was that many times, if someone has floaters that are really bothersome, floating spots in the vision, floaters, and then they kind of get used to it over time, and then they develop new floaters. Those new floaters, especially if it's a bunch of them, a shower of floaters, then that's something that should be addressed or should be taken care of promptly in order to be checked to make sure that that new floaters is not a sign of something dangerous or something to worry about. Okay? Well, we're going to take a little break for the news. When we get back, we'll take your calls.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Their experienced surgeons have extensive cataract and general eye care experience. And they proudly welcome their newest eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen Ree. Dr. Ree brings a wealth of experience to the Hawaiian Eye Center team. To schedule an appointment with a member of the eye care team, call Hawaiian Eye Center today at 733-2020 or visit the website at hawaiianeye.com.
The news authority in Honolulu is News Radio, 830 KHVH.
It's 75 degrees, partly cloudy in Honolulu. I'm Julia Norton Dennis. Here's what's happening. Italian Premier Silvio Berlusconi is preparing to resign as promised now that Italy's parliament has passed reforms demanded by the European Union. The steps are aimed at bringing Italy back from the brink of economic crisis. An Iranian exile group claims that a blast at a military installation near Tehran resulted from rockets exploding at a base for the missile forces of Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps. The blast killed at least 27 soldiers. Iranian officials describe it as an accidental explosion at an ammunition depot. President Obama in town to host the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation meets today on the sidelines with Chinese President Hu Jintao, Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, and Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Noda. He'll also meet with U.S. business leaders today to highlight the importance for interests back home of the Asia-Pacific region. The First Lady, Michelle Obama, will visit the Ma'o Organic Farms in Waianae at about 11:30 a.m. She'll get a guided tour from student farmers, then sit down for a conversation with youth about youth leadership engagement and community responsibility. Then she hosts a luncheon for the spouses of APEC leaders at Kualoa Ranch. Law enforcement authorities are looking for a patient who is missing from the Hawaii State Hospital in Kaneohe. 30-year-old Robert Pacheco has been missing since Thursday. Police searched the area around the hospital but didn't find him. Pacheco was last seen at a gym on hospital grounds. Hospital officials reported an extra set of clothes might be missing as well. Pacheco's 5 feet 7, 205 pounds, black hair, brown eyes. He was wearing a blue dress shirt and brown pants. Island weather, there's a high surf advisory for east shores today, mostly sunny, breezy, high in the mid-80s. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low near 72. Tomorrow, sunny, currently in Honolulu, 75.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers you complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Advanced technology lenses are designed to provide good vision for distance, near and in between, with less dependence on eyeglasses. When cataracts blur vision, a short, painless procedure helps. If you have a cataract and want back youthful vision, call Hawaiian Eye Center at 733-2020 or visit hawaiianeye.com.
The phone lines are now open at 521-8383. On the neighbor islands, it's a free call, 1-888-565-8383. And now, here's Dr. Christopher Tortora.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Here we are in the second half of the Hawaiian Eye Show. Hope you're enjoying the show so far and getting something out of it. We're going to go straight to the phone lines where we've got Jared standing by. Hi, Jared. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Doctor. I have a newborn, and, I've heard a lot of different theories and rumors about eye development and what you should avoid as far as overexposure to light, even artificial light, could you kind of demystify that for me, or are there any best practices, for keeping her eyes intact or helping her develop well?
I don't have any specific studies that I'm aware of that talk about light exposure creating any kind of problem for kids. There are some things about the sleep-wake cycle and so forth that they should be perhaps in total darkness or almost total darkness for some period of time, because a lot of people leave on night lights and things. So I remember a few studies a few years back about the advantages or disadvantages of using night lights, but it didn't really have much to do with the development of the eye, I don't think. I think it just had to do with their sleeping and waking cycles or something. I'm not familiar with anything that would give you a whole lot of guidance about what to do light exposure-wise for a newborn. But what I would do is just what I would do for anyone's eyes, which is basically protect them from really bright light like sunlight and from the ultraviolet light. So if you do go out in the sun, you wouldn't think of, just leaving your child out there without protection on their skin,
right,
sunscreen or something. So you don't want to leave them out there without protection of their eyes too. And so as long as they're under some kind of a canopy, or they, you can get them used to wearing sunglasses at an early age. I mean, not a newborn, but as she gets out and about, then maybe start getting her used to at an early age wearing sunglasses so that she doesn't pull them off like my son always did, because I never got him used to it early enough, I don't think. So that would be the only thing at this point that I'd recommend.
So like ceiling lamps that look directly into the crib or anything, that's not really a problem at all for them?
Yeah, I don't think it would be a problem. I mean, they can choose to look where they want to look. So, I mean, if they don't look right at the light, or they look right at the light, they're sort of choosing what they prefer. I mean, if it's a really glary or it's uncomfortable for you, it may be uncomfortable for her too. So, I'd put a shade on the light or something, but the light itself, I don't think it would do any harm.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for your call. All right. So newborns, their eyes actually are still developing at the time that they're born. And the development of the eyes continues through youth all the way up to probably around age 8 or 10 in terms of the development of the vision pathways. And it's kind of interesting because the eyes actually rely on the sensory data that they receive in order to develop some of the pathways and some of the habits that they need as you get older. As you start to see the world around you, your eyes learn, you learn to track with your eyes, you learn to keep your eyes focusing together. Your brain learns to interpret what it sees. The visual pathways develop. And so if you keep one eye blocked or covered in a child, or the vision is poor because of something affecting the eye, like a cataract or something that is temporarily blurring the vision, which can be later corrected, what happens is that the kids never develop good vision in that eye because the nerve pathways have not developed properly in order to develop the best possible vision potential from that eye. And we call that amblyopia. Some people call it a lazy eye. And so there are a few things that can cause lazy eye or amblyopia. And one is having the vision blocked from one eye or blurred because of some other condition, either a droopy eyelid or a cataract in the eye or something else, that a big growth on the eyelid that blocks the vision sometimes can occur. There are little things called hemangiomas that get better by themselves. They shrink by themselves, but they may do damage to the vision because there are big growths on the eyelids and they block the vision, and then they don't get better. They don't resolve or go away until the child is, you know, 2 or 3 years old. But in the meantime, their vision is blocked, so they're not developing proper vision during that time. So anything that may block or blur the vision, or if the eyes are not aligned properly, like they're cross-eyed, that can certainly affect the development of the eyes over time. So something to be aware of. The eyes over time, the newborn is actually not able to focus very well, so they kind of look a little bleary-eyed. They don't really look like they're focusing, but very early in life, within a few days of birth, they should be able to fixate on an object. Usually a human face is a common object that they like to fixate on. There's something innate that they like about a human face. So if you move your face around in front of them from left to right, you should catch them trying to follow your face, turning their eyes, moving their head a little bit to try to catch what you're doing, to try to follow the visual stimuli. And this happens fairly early in life, within a few days usually of birth. So immediately after birth, the newborn is really not going to see or fixate on anything. I mean, if you can imagine being in a vision-deprived environment for basically the whole time of your development, and then all of a sudden you're cast out into this world that's full of light and images and sounds and smells and all this stuff, your senses don't quite know what to make of it. So you probably just spend a lot of time crying. Well, that's what newborns do, isn't it? Okay. That's probably why, because they're overwhelmed. Anyway, over time they develop vision changes. But as far as I know, there's not a lot of studies that support whether or not different types of light exposure would have an impact on the development of vision over time. So just avoid the really bright lights and try to get those sunglasses going at an early age. Okay, we have a news story here about space travel. Says here, space travel might lead to eye trouble. And there's an article here that I'm looking at that says, astronauts who spend 6 months or more in space may experience changes in the structures in the back of their eyes, causing their vision to become blurry, according to a new study from NASA. It says researchers found these changes may be the result of prolonged exposure to microgravity and could affect plans for trips to Mars or other long-term manned space voyages. Oh, okay. I remember when I used to read science fiction, they used to create like artificial gravity in spaceships so that people wouldn't suffer the effects of low gravity. I guess NASA didn't read those same science fiction books that I did. Anyway, in astronauts over age 40, like non-astronauts of the same age, the eye's lens may have lost some ability to change focus, according to an ophthalmologist with the Alaska Native Medical Center. The space program's early days, most astronauts were younger, military test pilots who had excellent vision. Today's astronauts tend to be in their 40s or older. This may be one reason we've seen an uptick in vision problems. Also, we suspect many of the younger astronauts were more likely to tough out any problems they experienced rather than reporting them. In conducting the study, which was published in the October issue of the journal Ophthalmology, the researchers examined 7 astronauts all around age 50 who spent at least 6 continuous months in space. The study revealed that all 7 astronauts experienced blurry vision while on the space station. The changes in their vision began roughly 6 weeks into their mission and continued long after they returned to Earth. The researchers also found that the astronauts had at least one change in the tissues, fluids, nerves, and other structures in the back of the eye. So that would explain the vision change, right? So it says since vision problems only affected astronauts who spent an extended time in space, and none of them had symptoms usually associated with increased pressure inside the brain, like headaches or double vision, ringing in the ears, the researchers concluded that the changes in the astronauts' vision were probably related to the microgravity, so very low gravity in space. The study authors noted how badly microgravity affects vision, how badly it affects vision varies from person to person. They added that more research is needed to explore why this is the case or why some astronauts are better suited for extended trips in space. Yep, that'll be important when we send people off to Mars. The researchers pointed out that NASA has acknowledged vision problems among its astronauts on long-term missions and currently provides them a special space anticipation glasses to improve their vision. Astronauts also undergo comprehensive eye exams and vision testing. So one of the things that that they're talking about doing at some point in the future is sending astronauts to farther and farther locations, like, for example, Mars. If you were going to send someone to Mars, people would need to be in a low-gravity situation for an extended period of time. And so if they were in this low-gravity situation for a long time, they would probably need to do something to make sure that that low gravity isn't causing negative problems in the eyes. Another summary of this news story, of this journal report, said that they had several types of changes in the back of the eyes that are associated with shifts in fluids in the back of the eye. And some of them actually shifted so that their prescription changed, their glass prescription changed a little bit. Okay, so we do have some open phone lines here now. If you want to give us a call, 521-8383 is the number to call. And we're happy to try to answer your questions here about eyes, about general medical eye care. I want to send a greeting out to all of our APEC attendees, the heads of state that are visiting Hawaii. You know, this is probably the most significant collection of heads of state that Hawaii has seen in its history. We've had President Obama here before, so welcome to President Obama, but we've also had, but we haven't had the presidents of Russia and heads of state of Australia and China and other Asian Rim countries before, so welcome to all of them as well. Dr. Portner was saying at the end of his program in the previous hour that he was hoping that President Obama would call in for a question. But since I know that President Obama just passed his health exam with flying colors, I doubt he's going to call into our program today. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we get back, we'll answer some more questions from you and go over some more iNews stories.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
With the latest technology, cataract care is often a fast, painless procedure with a rapid return to normal vision and normal activities.
It doesn't hurt. It just takes, 15, 20 minutes the most, and you're out. That's it.
We strive to make your procedure safe and painless. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, hawaiianeye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Life has never looked better.
The phone lines are open at 521-8383. And from the neighbor islands, 1-888-565-8383. Now, back to Dr. Christopher Tortora, our host of the Hawaiian Eye Show.
All right, welcome back, everyone. And we're going to go straight to the phone lines where Richard is waiting patiently there. Richard, you're on the air.
Yes, doctor. I've just been wondering, I've been actually looking at the sun in the afternoon. Well, not in the afternoon, it's right before sunset. And I was looking at a documentary on television called Eat the Sun, and it's about sun gazing, where they say that the pineal gland is, when exposed to the sun, which it is normally, it expands, it grows. And being the master gland, it affects all the other glands of the body. And over time, the need for eating goes away. Have you heard about this?
The pineal gland, if it expands, it keeps you from needing to eat anymore. It reduces the appetite, or it eliminates your need to eat altogether?
Well, it eliminates the appetite, because what we're taking into our bodies, it comes from the sun. No matter what we eat, if we didn't have sun, it wouldn't be there. We wouldn't be either. So instead of taking supplementations, the desire for food actually diminishes. Now, they say that to look at the sun directly for 10 seconds, and then the following day do it for 20, and then so on and so on. I'm up to 14 minutes, and I have lost weight. I feel really good. My energy's up, and I just wondered if you had any thoughts about it. I'm supposed to do it for 44 minutes, actually. I'll build up to 44 minutes. I'm up to 14.
And are you looking directly at the sun?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, the one thing I do know 100% for sure is that if you do that, you will lose your vision. You'll lose your central vision over time. Because I can't tell you for sure, but ultraviolet, you know, rays from the sun cause damage to the macula, to the sensitive central seeing tissue inside the eye. And so not only does it significantly increase your risk for things like macular degeneration, but it causes direct damage to the macular tissue. So I would not recommend anyone to stare directly at the sun ever, because the sun basically is a very intense emitter of light and also of ultraviolet radiation. And our eyes are very intense focusing systems. And have you ever seen what happens when you take a magnifying glass and focus the sun's light on an ant? And that's basically what you're doing to the back of your eye. You know, you're focusing this intense light from the sun on the back of the eye. Now, the only thing that's probably saving your vision is that you're doing this at the, you know, at the end of the day when the sun is passing through a lot of atmosphere in order
before it gets to you. That's the recommendation,
right?
If you do it 1 hour before sunset or 1 hour after sunrise, within 1 hour before sunrise.
Right. So there's a possibility that you won't get as much damage to your eye because you're doing it during a time when there's low ultraviolet exposure. But the trouble is that, you know, in different parts of the world, there's more and less ozone. You don't know what the ultraviolet radiation is today versus tomorrow. I mean, there's no way to really do that safely. And so, you know, my concern is that you're doing damage to your eyes over time by doing this. Now, whether or not it makes you feel better and it helps your pineal gland expand and so forth, I really can't comment about that because there haven't been any studies that have studied that, because we know that people are going to go blind if they do this, and so we don't tell them to do it. That's why we don't study it. But the but what I would say, though, is that, you know, you're never going to eliminate your need for food, because we as human beings can't do photosynthesis. So the plants, you know, plants get energy from the sun because they can convert the sun's energy and the sun's light into things that they can use. But, you know, our bodies are not capable of doing that. So I'm glad you feel better and that you're eating okay. But that your eating is reduced. But I would perhaps try to think about a different way to try to achieve those goals through exercise.
Well, I saw this documentary on television. it was on about, well, a couple of months ago, called Eat the Sun.
Right.
And it's on YouTube. There's thousands of people doing it around the world. And yeah, there have been scientific studies on it.
Well, I'll certainly look it up. But but I think that, you know, that there are certainly, you know, places around the world where there have been sun worshippers and people who do, are sun gazers and so forth. But they do also have documented, you know, damage to their vision and eventually can lose the central vision. Now, you're not going to go entirely blind from doing this. You're not going to lose all of your vision, but you may very well lose a significant amount of the central acuity, which is your ability to read fine print, to see, you know, the hands of your watch, all the things, recognize people's faces, all the things that require a sharp central acuity of the vision. And so I think the risk is quite high of doing this type of thing for the potential benefit that you get, because, you know, there are other ways to curb your appetite and by getting the right kind of exercise.
That was just a side thing.
Right, by getting the right kind of
pineal gland.
Yeah, no, I understand. But, you know, but the pineal gland, yes, you know, we don't know fully what all the effects of the pineal gland are. And I don't know if anyone has done x-rays before and after to see if the pineal gland actually enlarges after you do this type of sun gazing. But I'll certainly look it up. And if I come up with anything interesting, I'll talk about it again on the program.
It's Eat the Sun.
All right. Thanks for your call.
There's also sungazing.com as well.
Okay. Thanks for your
call. Thank you.
All right. Aloha. Yeah, well, you'd have to be careful about things like that, you know, because there's a lot of things out there that people embrace as potentially healthy. And, you know, on the surface, it kind of makes sense. You know, if you say, gee, you know, the reason for this is that I'm getting more sun exposure, and because the sun is the giver of life, that gives me more life, and my pineal gland is the manifestation of that, but you can't lose sight of the basics, which are things like our eyes are a delicate system of a sensory system which rely on all of the parts working properly in order to work well. And when you are exposing those parts to things that are potentially damaging to them, then that's going to potentially give you trouble down the road, or maybe even, you know, right away. And staring at the sun for 30, 40 minutes is definitely not something that I would recommend. I don't even, you know, when we look for the green flash at sunset, you know, I always tell my family or whoever's around just to glance back and forth at the sun and not to stare at it, even though it's very low in the sky and it's nowhere near as bright or intense. You know, it's never safe to look at the sun. You know, whenever they have those eclipses, they tell you, you know, don't look directly at the sun, even with those filters that you can look through. Try to look at an image of the sun that's reflected, or that's on a camera, or that's a pinhole camera, or that's, or at minimum, look through these really thick visors to protect yourself from the ultraviolet light from the sun. You know, I see what happens to people who are exposed just for a few seconds to high energy ultraviolet light from a flash burn when they're welders and they're striking up their arc, and they don't get their mask down in time right after they strike up the arc. There's a huge emission of ultraviolet light when that arc is first lit, and that ultraviolet causes severe damage and irritation to the surface of the eye. And although the sun by itself doesn't cause this type of reaction over a short period of time, staring at the sun for a more extended period of time, particularly during hours when the ultraviolet light from the sun is more intense, then that's certainly an issue. Now, this last caller, as I said, is somewhat protected because he's doing it late in the evening, and we know that before 10 a.m. and after 3 p.m. there's less ultraviolet light out there, so it's a little safer times to go surfing and, you know, other things that you're trying to avoid the UV light, and you're spending a lot of time outdoors. But that doesn't mean there's no UV light out there. That doesn't mean that the intensity of the sun is not as high as it could be. You know, you'd probably be harder to burn an ant with a magnifying glass with the sun low in the sky, but with a strong enough magnifying glass, you probably could, no matter how high or low the sun in the sky. So it's an interesting practice. Eat the sun. I guess we'll have to look that one up and let you guys know what I learn about that. We have a couple other news stories here. We have a news story here about lens implants in the eye. Whenever we do cataract surgery, we put in a lens implant to focus the light in your eye. New implants are designed to focus vision both for distance and near. So people who opt to have a what we call premium lens procedure end up with implants that focus light both distance and near. And with these implants, it's critical that they're sitting in the right position for them to work properly, whether it's what we call an accommodative implant that moves forward and back as your eye focuses, or whether it's a multifocal implant that gives you multiple focuses in the same implant and requires two different images that then need to be focused by your eye. All of these implants need to be in the proper position inside the eye. So this particular study shows that the rate of dislocation of lens implants over time after surgery is very low. So it says this was a retrospective population-based study to demonstrate that the risk of late posterior chamber implant dislocation requiring surgical treatment after cataract surgery is low. The cumulative risk of posterior chamber lens dislocation was 0.1% at 10 years after surgery, increasing to 1.7% at 25 years after surgery. Things that can affect the position of the lens are the placement of the lens to begin with at the time of surgery, but also things that change within the eye itself. If, for example, the natural lens inside the eye was a little bit loose to start with, then that can mean that the implant can be a little loose in its position, and over time it can move out of position just because the anatomy of the eye is such that the zonules, which are little thin fibers that hold the lens in position, are weak. Well, we've been here now for an hour talking about eyes and eye care, and I certainly had a lot of fun, and I hope you have too. I'd like to thank Linda for helping out here in the studio and say thanks to all you listeners for making the show work through your calls and through your letters. If you enjoyed our program today, be sure to tell your friends about us. And if you learned something new, you can always listen again next week. If you have a question, email it to us. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and we can answer those questions over the air. Check out our website at www.hawaiianeye.com, a brand new look to the website. I think you'll like it, videos and everything else that you can look at. Or follow us on Twitter. Go to twitter.com/Dr. Tortora, D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A. Another good place to find out some of the things that are going on in the world of eyes is our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/Hawaiian Eye Center and check out some of the things that are going on in the world of eyes. The Hawaiian Eye Show is sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. I'm Dr. Christopher Tortora. Thanks so much for listening, and aloha.
You've been listening to The Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, with Harvard-trained eye surgeon Dr. Christopher Tortora. If you have an eye problem, want to get a second opinion, or aren't seeing as well as you used to, make an appointment with Dr. Tortora or one of the doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center in Central Oahu or Hilo by calling C-2020. That's 733-2020. Until next week, here's looking at you.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
The Glenn Beck Program has a new home.
I know where we're headed. I know where I'm headed. You want to join me?
Weekday afternoons at 4.
I'm going in a different direction.
On News Radio 830 KHB.